All right, welcome back. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. In the midst of the spasm of violence toward in the late spring going into summer last year, when everybody was saying, what can we do? A group of community folks got together along with law enforcement. When I say community folks, it was not just the muckety mucks. It was grassroots folk. Folk in the streets, folk who talk with youth, folk who talk with ex-offenders, folks who talk with folks that are being victimized in the neighborhoods. And they came together in a multitude of ways to say, what can we do to reduce and prevent crime in our neighborhoods? And this morning over at the Forest Manor Multi-Service Center, that plan kind of was publicly released. You'll hear about it tonight on the news at 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, and 11. In the House are not only some folks locally that put it together. We got somebody from, you might have heard of a town called Chicago. Yeah, that's a place where subway trains think they can go and get on an escalator and go get on an airplane. But y'all might...
Oh, that's wrong.
But at least that's better than what Chicago has been known for, and that is the killing fields of neighborhoods on the south and the west side. And one of the we got in the studio besides Regina Marsh, executive director of the Forest Manor Multi-Service Center, and Tammy Butler Robinson, whose company helped put all of this plan, you know, the ideas together in a workable plan. We have a special guest, Amina Matthews. She's going to be over at Tinley tonight at 6 o'clock, and she works with an organization called Chicago Ceasefire as a senior violence interrupter. It says that right here. I don't know what that is, but I'm interested to hear that because that sounds serious. Ladies, welcome. Sisters, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Tammy, what did you all announce today? In a nutshell, what's in this plan? What is in there? People are going to want to know what's in there that's going to work.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be on today, Amos. It's been an exciting day since we kicked off with the press conference. And so we introduced today the Citywide Crime Prevention and Reduction Plan. And the vision for the plan is very simple, and that is to become a safer city. And we have adapted some things from Memphis Gun Down Plan, as well as the blueprint that took place in Minneapolis. They were able to be very successful in reducing crime in their communities. In Memphis, they saw a reduction at 13% in youth gun violence. And in Minneapolis, since the plan has gone into place, they saw a 62% reduction since 2006. And so today we released a plan after having 90 different people get engaged in the process, 60 different organizations that have been meeting, as you stated, since August of last year, when we had several kids at the Forest Manor Multi-Service Center that had been impacted, as well as their families. And so there's four main areas to the plan. There's intervention and prevention that's a part of the plan, community mobilization, suppression, advocacy, and awareness.
Yeah, go ahead.
As you look at each of those individual components, the intervention and prevention really has a focus on parental training and support, being able to provide everything from a parental helpline, making sure that's in place, to having mentoring programs as a Big Fathers program, working in collaboration with the Indianapolis Housing Agency to do a program where they have youth reduction teams in the field, being able to make sure that if there are triggers of violence are characteristics for at-risk youth that are getting in trouble, that they get coordinated care, case management services taking place as well. Another key component is agency collaboration. There are over 43 agencies that receive crime prevention dollars, public safety funding, as well as existing organizations that are out there doing great work in the community that help to dissolve the root causes of crime, whether it be economics and poverty, or if it's social environment or family structure. And so this will bring those organizations together, giving them the tools as well as being able to assess what is going on, having data in place to make data-driven decisions there when it comes to intervention and prevention. On the community mobilization, it's really about creating community value systems, making sure that at a neighborhood level, people are saying, I will not tolerate, or this is what our community embraces and stands for, and making sure that people protect that and promote that. Also, we talk about organizing neighborhoods, making sure that people know their neighbors, know who people are in the communities, and organizing around that, whether it's through empowering the crime watch in those communities, and then also the suppression, improving relationship between police officers as well as community residents, and making sure that people are talking with each other, understanding each other, whether it's being culturally competent, as a police officer and knowing how to interact, or as a citizen, knowing your rights and what to do when you're stopped by the police. And then the last piece of the plan is the advocacy and awareness component, which is really saying, of these things, what requires policy changes or legislative changes to go into place that we need to advocate for, having foot patrols and more police on the street, or being able to make sure that there are equitable resources in these communities to make sure that we really do dissolve the root causes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, in these groups that were meeting, the police department was participating not just with one person, but there was involvement by hearing from law enforcement and law enforcement hearing from grassroots folks.
Very much so. From the beginning, the police chief has either designated someone to be at every meeting or has been at the meetings themselves. Mm-hmm. They have been very forthcoming in sharing lots of data with us. This is a data-driven plan. We have looked at the data. We've looked at the areas. We've looked at the zip codes. And we've identified where the problems and where the issues are. And a lot of that is because the police department has been so open to sharing data with us.
One of the things that it was interesting, Erica Smith of the Indianapolis Star was at the press conference, and she tweeted out when she saw the slide that broke down what some of the problems were in the 46218 zip code. And she was shocked that single-parent households were only 16%. She must have been assuming everything, if it's a poor area, it must be 50%. How important is it that data comes out that people really see it's not your perception, here's what's real, not what you think it is?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think single parents get a hard rap sometimes because system-wide, my pastor recently talked about single-parent households are not what everybody thinks. They're not the – it's usually women in their 30s to 40s. There are more single households of women with jobs, women with degrees, women that are professional. There are more of those single households out there. We want to say we want to focus on putting a man in a household. We want to focus on these communities. Yes, they're needed. But we also have to provide supports for single parents that are still raising their children the right way or still having the issues that they are fighting out there in their community to keep their children safe and on the right path to success.
So we
continue to perpetuate that's the problem as opposed to lifting up what a solution is to help these women to raise these young children.
So now there's going to be a community meeting tonight over Charles Tinley School in the Meadows, mm-hmm. and that's where Amina Matthews comes in. Regina, who is Amina Matthews? I'm going to ask you here in a minute, what is a senior violence interrupter?
Well,
that sounds like something Spock did on Star Trek.
Well, what's so great about her, and I talked about this today at the press conference, it is her program is Pause for Peace, mm-hmm. you know, and we talked about, and she'll go into it a little bit, of how if we took 30 seconds and stopped before in dealing with conflict and learned how to take that 30 seconds and step back and really look and think about the ramifications of our actions is a way we can kind of stop some of this conflict resolution, some of this conflict that's going on in our communities. Amina, I met her actually through one of our homeboys here, Mike Epps, a few years ago in Chicago. Mike has been very close with Amina and her husband for a few years and has actually been on the streets and with her out in the communities. And then on top of that, I met her again this past July in New Orleans, and we just talked about I could see her passion for making changes in her community and fighting with her community and wanting to help her community become safer and sounder, and on top of that, saving the babies in those neighborhoods. And so she'll tell you a little bit more about that. So we said, well, why not bring someone that's in the trenches every day to bring us some tools here to Indianapolis tonight and to help us become interrupters, help us teach people to pause for peace. And so we are hoping tonight to get enough folks in there tonight that will be willing to be trained, learn, come to a training on in April to learn how to be an interrupter.
So what y'all do in Chicago, girl?
Well, we get the numbers down as far as the violence, and if we look at it, in the data now, the violence is down in Chicago so far 85%. So if you put people in the trenches that are credible messengers that can, you know, get in and defuse and be proactive as well as, you know, reactive on some things that may spark on the retaliatory end, but our goal is to be very, very proactive and using that key component with community mobilization.
The people that volunteer to do that, are they from all types of backgrounds in the neighborhood, in the neighborhoods?
Well, far as yes, but with that violence interrupters, they're typically ex-offenders
okay.
that are formerly known in whatever type of organized organization, if you will.
That's right, because there's much more gangs, far more organized in Chicago. They've been there 60 plus years, as opposed to here, where it's kind of like you're a gang member today and then you're gonna do something else tomorrow kind of thing.
Well, you know, the dynamics of gang affiliation has changed okay. around the nation, period. You know, once the leadership has been dismantled from the community, so does the loyalty, so does the really membership of keeping our community safe, because mm-hmm. that's how it was, you know, back in when I was growing up. The gangs made sure that our community was safe.
239-1310, 239-1310. You may have questions. We're here with Regina Marsh, Tammy Butler Robinson, and Amina Matthews. 239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is for a Tuesday. Is it? Chicago is a very dense city where you got 3 million people kind of packed up on top of each other. Here we've got a space. They may not have told you this, but the size of Indianapolis, the land area, is bigger than the land area of the five boroughs of New York,
mm-hmm.
with only 900,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of more spread out, more laid back, more single family homes, even if the people there are renting. Is that different than in the apartment culture of Chicago, where people are kind of all on top of each other?
Well, what I think is that question was posed today, really not too long ago, about how the population and the dynamics of housing is that affecting and how does that affect mm-hmm. The violence in our community. One thing that I noticed is that once they close the projects down,
mm-hmm. the big tall things along the 94 down,
yes,
the Dan Ryan,
mm-hmm. Ida B. Wells,
right.
And once they closed that down, it left the community to get subsidized housing and move into different neighborhoods. But what we do see is that they're frequently moving. They're frequently moving, and they're not staying there long like we used to have 20-year stakeholders mm-hmm. in one community, 30-year stakeholders in a community. The community, as well as the way that the guys, the mindset, is changing like technology changes.
Right, right.
It's so quickly, and housing as well. It's so quickly changing. They're moving out and relocating to another side of a city or suburbs, and then we have issues out there that we have to deal with because now they're new into that community and they think that they can do their thing in that community that has been established for 15, 20 years.
239-1310. 239-1310 is absolutely his name. Let me go to Marlena. Hi there.
Yes. Hi, Amos.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about the violence going on in Indy.
Mm-hmm.
I actually used to live about 8 or 9 years ago. I lived in a housing community, and I recall one time when I was sitting outside, my children and one of my neighbors was sitting outside, and then all of a sudden there was just a lot of commotion going on where someone had was shooting, and one of the guys that was well known in the area for being gang affiliated had yelled for everybody to get their children. So I just wanted to make a comment where she had made the comment of they were protecting the community. That's kind of what I experienced, even though they were doing something wrong, and I'm not upholding criminal activity in any way. But I just, that day just kind of stuck with me because had it not been for the gentleman and the other people running, trying to protect the children, you know, one of our kids or someone could have got hurt. So there are times when I think that the idea of gangs or what's going on in Indy now with all the young people killing each other and just so much going on is that we need to come together as a community and build and protect and try and help each other and try and get a hold of these kids because they're so young and so much is going on. And the young guy that had told us to get our kids in the house, I think he might have been a teenager at that time as well. I think that they want their children out here that's doing the wrong thing or involved in gang activity, but they really are just trying to or want to be something or be a protector, and that needs to be come out more to help them not necessarily get involved with guns and drugs and break the law, but just to build the community. And that's my comment. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Let me go to Norman at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Amos, and good afternoon to your distinguished panel.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
No, good afternoon. I just got, and trust me, this is not going to be, I don't mean this in a negative way, but I want to say something that there's a couple of real small dynamics that have always been missed when it comes to dealing with Indianapolis communities and our police department and our communities that are involved in large with our young people and the crime and this, that, and the other. And I never hear anyone mention this. A lot of the young people that are committing the crimes, even sometimes, some of these young people are also coupled or in harmony with some people that are a little bit older. And not only that, some of these, and you'll find if you're taking this kind of research, you'll find a lot of these young people that are doing what they do for us and selling the little drugs and the little activity, they are doing this activity in the same community in which they were raised. So 9 out of 10, somebody that's somebody's nephew, that's somebody's little cousin, that's somebody's grandson, that's somebody's son. And a lot of times, just like the other day on Brother Brown's program, was a sister on there who's a little young brother. He went to a party for the very first time.
Yeah.
His little brother gets shot. Nobody says nothing, but somebody knows something. But what it is, it's somebody's nephew. It's somebody's grandson. It's somebody. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens? Here's what happens when the police come in our community. Right now, you know, I have them, and I can't take nothing away from our new site. The guy's a very awesome individual.
Right.
But something I have to actually admit, when the police come in our area, brother, I work 30 miles from my tax base. So when I come in my area, the police will look at me like I stole something. Then if you try to talk to them about anything, they look at you like you don't have any type of voice or whatsoever. Then, when you do have the opportunity to talk to them, then they get this. They forget that they're a first public servant. Now, I understand their job is hard, brother. My job is hard too. But they're public servants. They do not treat us like they're serving us. They treat us like they're doing us a favor, and for us to get out of their way and let them do their thing. That's the reason why that some of the communication barriers that we're having are not being broke down. And it's not because people can't communicate. It's because of the barriers that have been placed there that will not be removed.
And Tammy,
so if someone could just address those issues, I think we can get things done. I'll take my comments off there.
I appreciate it, Tammy Butler Robinson. Does the plan address some of what Norman's talking about?
It really does, Norman. So there's two pieces in the plan. As I talked about, suppression is one of the four focus areas. And so there are two strategies that have been identified, and that's improving the cooperation understanding between the police and their community. And that is about encouraging citizens to participate in monthly Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department task force meetings, also engaging the community in the recruitment of officers that mirror the community. So when you talk about there being a breakdown from a cultural standpoint, a communication standpoint, and then also being able to have police and citizens working together to identify alternatives for the community. Is one component that's listed. And then there's that whole piece about educating citizens on their rights and the roles and responsibility of law enforcement. And so people understand what their rights are when they are approached by the police, but then also the police being able to know how to interact. There's one strategy that's in the plan that talks about a charm school for law enforcement so that people understand how to treat individuals as with respect.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Amina Matthews. I'm curious. There's roughly 900,000 to a million black folk in Chicago. Just roughly, how many black folk are involved in out in the streets of Chicago trying to reduce the level of violence in Chicago neighborhoods?
There's amazing programs that are, you know, anti-violence, that have and implement anti-violence initiatives. And what we have to do is collaborate with each other so we can combat the whole city of violence. And the violence in Chicago is really clique-related. And these guys, the youth, and it's the ages are getting younger and younger. Right. That's what's really so paralyzing and stagnating to me, that I have to stop for a second and say, my goodness, this is a 13-year-old facing double murder. Mm-hmm. How could that possibly be?
And the reason I bring it up is, so are we saying that maybe there's a couple of hundred organizations in Chicago dealing with that and maybe a couple of thousand volunteers? Less than that?
Yeah, it's not, you know, when we volunteer, it's really hard. It's hard out here, and economically it's very hard. And it's hard to ask a guy that has put time in,
right,
and now he wants to give back to his community to volunteer. Mm-hmm. So the volunteering piece is when we're laid off for 6 months, you volunteer if you can, right, if you can hold on to your household for that long. But it's really hard to ask someone to volunteer when you have babies and wife, a car note and mortgage at home to really help. It's really hard to really have that piece of volunteering.
What I was trying to give a sense to the audience is I got listeners that think that, you know, we got 300,000 African Americans here in the metropolitan area who think that all 300,000 should be out in the neighborhoods dealing with that. And no. I'm going, wait a minute now. Let's be realistic. And no. I figured in an area three times the size of our black community, I was trying mm-hmm. to get some sense of it. There ain't 100,000 black folk out in Chicago. No.
No, not at all. It's just, you know, the thing about it is when we look at how the system has set up us to not be neighbors to each other. Well, we come out and you know, we get in our cars or we walk to the bus stop and we won't speak to each other if we're crossing paths. Mm. You know, it's because we don't, some people, not we, don't want to get involved with what that neighbor or what that child is doing. And what I say to them is that if you don't think that it's not in your household, if a young guy and girl gets shot and killed and it's not in your community, mm-hmm. it's still your problem because taxes you're paying for that trauma
right.
when they go into the trauma unit. And, you know, it's always good to be a good neighbor because you never know what young guy that you may have to, what young girl that you may have to help or help you. So they're our future. We can't just go by them like they don't exist and that the issue does not exist. Violence is just really the end result of a whole systematic of things that occurs.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is. We're talking about the launch, the presentation of Citywide Crime Prevention and Reduction Plan. You can hear more about it tonight, 6 o'clock, over at Charles Tinley School in the Meadows. 239-1310. Yeah. 239-1310. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. It's afternoon's with Amos on a Tuesday. Oh, just hearing Councilman Simpson's voice, that reminded me, on the program tomorrow, besides 100 black women, they got something going on. They'll be here. I will raise the question tomorrow. Why our mayor and our city, when presented with a legal subpoena to produce documents, don't want to produce no document? The only people I know in elected office that never wanted to obey a subpoena was some guy named Nixon. Mm-hmm. first name Richard. But that's tomorrow. Let's deal with regular keeping violence and crime down. Let me go to William. Hi, William.
How you doing, Mr. Brown?
I'm fine, sir.
I got a question for the guest.
Yes.
Comment, rather. There used to be an apartment complex on the south side called Gulfstream. We used to call it Looneyville. And there used to be another complex on the south side, which used to call it Brick City.
Yo, yeah, I remember Brick City now. Okay.
And they closed over two apartments. There was so much crime in that area. They closed those two apartment complexes down because of the police runs in that area. And they reassigned most of the people over to the fairgrounds, a little motel called, I think it was the Fairfield. But anyway, it was a little 38th Street and Boston Parkway.
Yeah.
And it was so much crime in that area because all of the criminals came together at one point. The police runs and all of the activity in the area, the drug sales, they raised that place and made a parking lot out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, all of the people that were in those three areas, they spread out throughout the whole city. Now, instead of the police knowing where they have to go to collect the people that was committing the crime, now they got to go through all the entire city in order to enforce the laws that they know and collect up the people that they know that is committing the crimes. I wanted to ask the guest. How do we get over the hefty young people to get over the what word would I use here? The gangster mentality.
The gangster mentality
that they feel that they have to emulate.
All right. That's a great question. Who wants to tackle that? How do you get people weaned off the gang mentality? I guess that's what William was trying to say.
You know, just really educating them. I don't think that was quite what he was trying to say, but we can really talk about that. The leadership of the gangs, all of them, you know, are in the penitentiary, the federal penitentiary, for a long time. So if we educate our young guys, if that's what you want to do, that's what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened if you go into state penitentiary. Right. This is what's going to happen. And if you gangbanging and you come in on the new in the penitentiary on a gangbanging tip, those older guys that may have life or they want to know what your education is about with the school, with the gangs.
Right.
So, you know, you have to educate our young men about and give them resources. It's really hard. I always talk about it's very hard out in Indianapolis, well, our nation, period, you know, far as to find a job, especially if you have a felony or, you know, if you have a background, it's hard to get a job. And it's really important that we have resources, that we do give those guys and girls, women and men, opportunities to come back and re-enter into our community and be productive members of society. And for the young guys that think that gangbanging is cool, social media is cool, putting it out there that... Right. You're gang banging. They're looking at that, and once they start looking at that, they're going to start approaching you on the street. And once they start approaching you, far as the legal aspect of it, once they start approaching you and continuously putting your name in the database, you'll look up and you'll have a felony before you know it.
Let me go to Lawrence at 239-1310. Hi there.
Oh, hello. I was going to address a question. I think y'all was talking about earlier about volunteers coming back and helping in the community.
Uh-huh.
Well, in a past life, I used to work at Forest Manor Multi-Service Center for a few years back in the early 90s, before I worked for the federal government as a system accountant. I work at the Finance Center out at Fort Benjamin Harrison. But interesting enough, many of us are approaching the year to retire. In fact, I'm retiring at the end of this year. And many other African-American men out there are doing as well, because about over one-third of the people out there are African-American. And many of the people there are very highly educated. I have a bachelor's degree and two master's degrees. There's many people there who have their doctorate degree. There's many people there who retired from the services as either a major, lieutenant colonel, or on the enlisted side, they left as a sergeant major. So you have a wealth of experience at the finance center and wealth of people who have education. And there, many of us are approaching, you know, retirement age, and we would love to go back out and use our experience in education or whatever to help in the communities. But, you know, I belong to a lot of meetings there, and we've all said, when we retire, what are we going to do? If we like to go into the community, where do we go? I mean, how do you do it? Shouldn't there be maybe a one-stop center where people who retire or have time on their hands and have experience can come and help out in the community again?
I have a one-stop center for you. It's called Forest Manor Multi-Service Center. It sounds like we need to be connected at the hip. I need you to give me a call. My name is Regina Marsh. My phone number is 317-414-9554. You are who we are looking for, but you're very right. There are many, many retirees, many people with skill sets in some of these corporations locally that we need to reach out to. Sometimes it's hard to get behind those doors. And so we need people like you willing to bring us behind the doors. I'll come and speak at lunch. I'll bring lunch. We can have volunteer training programs, whatever it takes. But I need you to grab my hand and pull me in there with you so that we can have conversations with these potential volunteers or people that want to give their time, talents, or treasures to this neighborhood. The change in our neighborhood is only going to happen if we decide to make it happen. And it has to be with all of us working together to combat crime in our community.
239-1310. Thank you. Well, back to the phones. Thank you, Lawrence. Back to the phones. Reverend Day. Hi there.
Hi there, Aaron. I mean, Amos.
Hi.
I'm sitting here with a group of African-American parents. We're in Concerned Clergy's in collaboration with the Marion County Department of Children's Service Prevention Program, along with Counselor Monroe Gray, Woodbridge Family Service, Joe Hoxett. And we're providing some prevention training. And I'll be remiss to go without congratulating Neighborhood Mother Regina Marsh and Pastor Tammy for the wonderful job. I've attended some of these meetings, and this is an excellent citywide project that's coming out. And while we stopped our training to listen to the show, and one of these parents had made a profound statement, and I just want her to share with you about one of the things that happened with our youth.
All right. Hi, parent.
Everyone.
Hi, parent. How are you?
I am blessed. Thank you.
What's up?
Well, one of my previous jobs I had as a youth mentor last summer, it was a part of the juvenile redirection program, and a young man was actually in our program because he was selling drugs. And when I asked him why did he take Kush to school to sell, or why was he even selling drugs, he said, let me tell you something. He said, do you know what it's like to walk into your house and you don't have any light? Do you know what it's like for your brother or your sister to be hungry and there's no food in the house, or your mother is on drugs and she's not there? Do you know what that's like? Thank you.
So I guess that goes to the point, and some of the concerned clergy, and I know Regina and Tammy is doing too, is we got to keep pushing education, quality jobs. How many of those jobs with this $23 million project is going to be designated not only to the residents of Indianapolis, but to African Americans who are the last hire, first fire, unemployment disproportionate. So I'll just congratulate you all. You're on the right track, and you can count on the concerned clergy to be beside you and help.
And Reverend Day, you can tell that mom that when she was, you know, giving her testimony, there was amen corners, you know, going here, because I think sometimes we get caught up in these perceptions. Mm-hmm. And the perception is that some of these young people doing illicit things, mm-hmm, are doing it. They're from families that have everything. And what that mom described is a basic human instinct that has been around around since Genesis.
Right.
And what do you do to take care of your family and survive? And if you can't survive licitly, you try to survive illicitly. And that's why the whole, you know, we've got to find positive employment alternatives for young people so they don't do illegal pharmaceuticals. Let's try to get them in an internship program at Lilly. Sell the pharmaceuticals legally.
That's very true.
I appreciate it, Reverend Day.
Very true, Amos, what you're saying. And that's one of the reasons when the plan was being put together, we wanted to make sure that we talked about what those root causes were for crime with economics and poverty, the social environment, family structure. And when you think about the economics piece, which when we were just talking about some of the data related to 46218 or some of the other top five of the homicide where homicides are occurring, it's 20% or more in unemployment. And when you look at poverty numbers, in some census tracks, they are more than 40% for children living in poverty in these particular areas. And so we have to make sure, and the plan does speak to, in a broad way, connecting youth to employment and educational opportunities, and then also making sure when you have talk about it, suspensions and expulsions, that our kids are not being put out of school, but there are alternative programs in place to make sure that they have a higher educational attainment. And now it's going beyond just getting a high school diploma, but making sure people are going on to college and becoming career ready and college ready as well, so they can compete. But the jobs have to be there for them at the end of the day.
Let me go to Casey at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing today, Amos?
Fine.
I wanted to say this about us as African Americans. Look at us. We have systematically been destroying ourselves for generation after generation after generation. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And like the lady said earlier, how do you get a 13-year-old child looking at a double and triple homicide charges? Just look at what the society that we live in today has allowed. You have parents that are being more friends than parents. You have parents becoming, you have kids having kids. School is not the thing to do anymore. There's a generational breakdown. You have to deal with DCS, CPS, whatever you want to call them, telling you you can't discipline your child a certain way. And you have the kids can call the police on the parents nowadays.
What do you do when
you have the kids overrunning the house and the parents, and then you have the people in office steady telling you that you're not allowed to be a parent?
Caller. You were doing fine till you got to the last 2 points. Let me say this on this program again. And I've had the juvenile court judge tell y'all this. I've had the lady who's now in charge of children and family services for this great state, who is the former juvenile judge in Lake County, Indiana. That's Gary, y'all. It is legal in Indiana. I can't speak to Illinois, but it is legal in Indiana to spank your child. It is legal. As long as what you are using to spank that child does not break skin, it is legal. So all y'all saying that it is not legal to discipline your child, so y'all are wrong again. I'm not arguing with most of everything else you said, but on that point, you ain't right, girl. That is not the truth.
Not only did I have to go to court, they took my kids.
For spanking them?
Yes.
No, they did not. How long ago was that?
January of this year.
Then you need to hold it. Stop. Then you need to go to the American ACLU of Indiana. If that is what you're telling me, you need to go to the ACLU of Indiana and get them to represent you. Because that does not sound like that is what happened in that case. But if you're telling me the goodness, honest truth, you need to go get a lawyer and fight that, because that is not the law in Indiana.
Good
All righty.
All righty. That's a fair deal. I appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our many moments as Afternoons with Amos after these. This just in, Chris. Thursday, day after tomorrow. We haven't had this in a long time. Child Support Day. On Afternoons with Amos, the folks from the Marion County Prosecutor's Child Support Division will be here. Amina Matthews will look at me. Yeah, that's what's going to happen with this. With this. She's going to be listening live on PraiseHindi.com. She going to want. Because let me tell you, we don't hear from no deadbeat dads.
It's all the mamas.
I'm only hearing from the responsible moms. And the responsible, I don't even hear from the irresponsible mom. I only hear from responsible moms and responsible dads. Maybe in honor of 10 years doing this show, maybe this time I'll hear from a deadbeat dad. Just once.
Tune in and see.
Yeah, tune in and see. 239-239-1310. Let me go back to the phones at Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
What I want to ask you about is, like you were talking about the males and how you're trying to stop the violence and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a situation. And what the situation is that I have a 19-year-old who is trying to do everything he's supposed to be doing. He was on probation for stealing a pair of pants.
Okay.
And he was sitting in our audition with his girlfriend. Police pulled up. They told him, roll down the window. He rolled down the window. They said, we smell alcohol. They gave him a breathalyzer. Both of them blew zero. Then what he did, he arrested him because he was on probation and said they were going to violate his probation. Well, even though they charged him with a misdemeanor or infraction or whatever it is, the lowest thing they said, you know, like you get charged with and a fine. But his probation officer is bent on violating him. Now, in his mind, he's doing everything he's supposed to do. He's following the law. He's staying in school. He's going, applying for college. You know, he's taking care of his daughter. And they jamming him up for something he, you know, he wasn't even
Was he in the house or he was in a car?
He was in the car.
Where did this occur?
In our house, in addition, on the, we have like a clubhouse.
Where? What side of town?
In Brownsburg.
Oh.
And everybody says, okay, you moved out in Brownsburg, you get what you get. But no, that's not the case. They shouldn't have to deal with it, deal with stuff like that just because where they live. And now I'm sitting up here having to pay an attorney, try to fight this over something because the probation officer wants to violate. Well, she is going to violate him. He didn't do anything. And that's... Yeah.
And all they pulled him over was because he was sitting in the
over. He was
sitting. Sitting in the car. They were sitting in the car, and I believe it was after dark. Correct?
Yes. And the thing is now he's just kind of like, but I didn't do anything. Why are they doing this? And the kids get so discouraged because of the fact that they get jammed up for stuff like that.
And I know I have listeners saying, okay, that's what happens when you go in the county. But here's the other problem. Until African-Americans who live in Hendricks County start getting their act together and get out and go to the county board meetings, go to the town board meetings, get out and start being seen and advocating for a change, you know, making appointments with the sheriff, making appointments with the chief judge, it ain't going to change because they don't believe y'all out there.
Well, see, it's not just African-American. It's just the kids in general.
Mm-hmm.
They do that to several kids. It doesn't matter.
Well, then you ought to find the white parents they're doing that to, and then you got black and white going to the county board meetings. The town. If you don't go to the meetings and confront the elected officials, they're being elected this year. The county councils in those counties, they're up for election. They're going to have candidates night. You need to go and positively confront them in a nice way.
Well, I'm going to do that. But my thing is what I'm just saying.
I understand.
There are some kids out there that are trying to do what they're supposed to do. But they're getting jammed up by the system just because maybe she had a bad day that day. So... Mm. She no. violates him,
and
or
I understand,
somebody
and I,
did something to somebody. You know,
you mean no? I understand completely, and but again, just as there are people here in Marion County, because there's a larger population that can advocate, you know, in the corridors of power, y'all out there in Hendricks County and Hamilton County and Hancock County, y'all got to get out there and do that, because I don't have nobody I know in Hendricks County. I got to make sure that I still have a visa to even drive out there. I appreciate it, Anonymous. Let me go to Nene right quick. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
And hi, guests. I'm glad people have come in to help us here in Indianapolis. My concern is this. We're not going to have a quick fix on this problem, and so we need to look at what we can do to help the young people get off the street. One thing we can do is have good youth programs that are funded, work programs for young people that are funded. There used to be some grants where young people could go to school half day in the summer and work half day. I don't know what happened to those, but I would like to see more dollars from the city go for employment for youth in the summer. If you get youth off the street and if you work them and get them tired, they're less likely to be involved in crime.
Well, maybe
that many of our people on probation, young men on probation, are illiterate. And so we've got to bring them up educationally. We have to put money in their pocket. And just the final thing, we have to teach value education, because, no, you can't make $200 a week on a youth summer program and think you can buy $300 Jordan. So, you know, we have to do those type of things also. But, you know, basically it's not a quick fix. We've got to start working with these young people. And where is the city and the dollars to employ our youth and to help the youth programs? We just closed MLK. I'm sure Regina can give you her horror stories about trying to stay open. I heard Flanner House might even be closing. So the entities that have helped our children in the past are going away. What are we replacing those with? So that's my question to the city who's coming to these meetings. And I'm sorry, I don't think more police is the problem. The young girl got stabbed the other night. I mean, the police couldn't have stopped that. Now we can get detectives to solve it. But I don't think all our dollars should go towards more police. We might need some more. I'll give them that. So we need money for our children to work and earn money and understand what it is to be a good citizen.
All right, good points, my sister. Tammy Butler Robinson, if people want to read the plan, if they can't get out tonight, 6 o'clock, Charles Tinley School, 38th and Meadows Drive, go to 38th Street to Meadows Drive, turn to the north, and you'll run into Tinley. Where can they find the plan?
We will be uploading the plan to the Forest Manor website, and so they're able to go to www.forest.com.
No.
www what?
Dot. FMMSC.org. That's Forest Manor Multi Service Center.
Or bottom line, sometime tomorrow it'll be on praiseindy.com, and we'll let you all know when we come on the broadcast tomorrow. And do that. We want to thank Amina Matthews, a senior violence interrupter in Chicago. Amen. And thank her and Tammy Butler Robinson and Regina Marsh, ladies. Thanks very much.